Mary, one problem that farmers have on a large scale in Australia, it's actually developed in more recent years, is rust on cereal crops. So what you're saying, if a farmer thought that there was a rust coming or rust was evident, well, normally they'd go out there with some sort of chemical. Could a microscope be of any value in the treating on rust in a cereal situation?
It would tell them very early that they have a rust and not something else. It would tell them very early that before they actually see a major proliferation of the fungal organism that causes rust, they might see a tiny little speck on one leaf. They can put that under the microscope and say, yes, this is a rust. Now, then they'll say, well, okay, what does a rust look like? Send it to me. I'll put it up on the website on the closed site, and then it's up there for them to look at. If they see something like that, yeah, this is a rust. What I'm starting to do now is build up some photographs from vegetable growers of the leafy greens to actually show the leaves and to say, if you see that symptom, then this is potentially the pathogen. This is what you need to do about it. So our website is growing all of the time, depending on what the growers are sending in. So it gives them the opportunity to see very, very early if they have, for example, the rust that you're talking about, before it actually gets to the stage where you can see it visually. Early warning, I think.
That's great, isn't it? Mm. That is really great.
The other thing, just on,
yes,
following that up, the other thing growers can do is we seem to be able to get, even from Western Australia in a priority post bag, we can get leaf material and plant material, Western Australia, Northern Territory, we can get it in the 48 hours with the post. So I do encourage farmers, even it doesn't matter how far away they are. I have clients in Queensland. They'll put something in a priority post bag, and in 48 hours, I can give them an answer. If they don't have access to a camera or something like that they can email. So we do offer a very rapid turnaround service if that's needed. But what I do encourage people to do is to have a digital camera and go out there, take a photograph, and of course the photograph has to be a decent one, and just to email it. And it often, just with a good photograph, one can say, look, I think you might be, this might be this particular disease starting to express. If at the same time they put some material into the post, then within 48 hours we can give them an answer.
Now, Mary, the bind has been opened. I will invite anyone to ask a question. We have got a screen here, and we can see if people want to ask a question. At this stage, we have got people on the line, but no one really wants to ask a question. So if they do, we just ask you to come online.
Yes.
Just interrupt. So if someone comes on the phone, we'll just stop talking, Mary. Is that okay?
Okay.
Okay. Now, the other thing too, Mary, you did mention in that biological talk you gave to the farmers at Oxley that you wouldn't mind farmers to collect data for you. What is that still appropriate, or is there anything you want to talk about in that area?
It is appropriate, and again, it depends on the farmer and their level of interest. One of the things that we have as biological scientists is chemical companies will come along and say, okay, show us the data. We can tell you how a chemical works. You show us the data of how biology works. And, of course, we don't have a lot of data that is peer-reviewed, because it's very difficult to collect that data, because you have to have people who are in that biological farming to be prepared to carefully collect data. And it's not difficult to do because we can do very simple experiments like presence or absence of or the whatever the system that the farmer is using as say the control, and then to try another system on part of the property and start off by, say, getting soil samples or plant samples, get some sort of baseline data, and then over the cropping season or the pasture season or whatever it happens to be, to say, well, okay, at the end of that period of time, we're going to compare the crop that came off and send some more soil samples in to see whether we've got a difference in our biology. But the thing is, it does mean that the farmer has to be committed to keeping a separation of information. And I, much as I want data, I'm not going to impose on a farmer another level of information gathering if they're really time poor. But what I would really love a farmer to be able to do for me or with me is at the beginning of a season, say, Mary, look, I'm interested in gathering some data. How can we go about it in the most simple form to get some data that's actually is actually statistically valid? So it can be as simple as just dividing a paddock up into two parts and doing one thing on one and something else on another. And I would really love to hear from farmers who would do that.
So there's a benefit in it for the farmer himself because he's progressing, and there's also a benefit for the farming community, I take it.
Absolutely. And the thing is, I mean, farmers have a really hard time trying to negotiate a price for anything. I'm a farmer, and so I'm talking from experience, and we are powerless to be able to say, I want this value for my crop or my animal, because we know what it's worth, but we're not going to get that. Now, when you've got some data, particularly if you're cropping, when you've got some data to say, on that biological part of my farm, I know that the protein level is this percentage higher than the other part of the crop, or I know my potatoes that came from this particular part, biological part, is a higher tonnage, or they're a better quality because you've had the sugars tested. They are in a more powerful position to then go and say, look, you know, don't just rub me out. I am offering you a quality crop. Pay a price for it. And unfortunately, we as farmers, we get penalized, but it's very difficult to get paid for quality. But if we had enough farmers who are able to prove that their crop has improved with data compared with the conventional, then that gives them some more power in negotiation. So I think it's incredibly important for us to gather this data, and over time, hopefully, as farmers, we'll get paid for quality.
That's an interesting point, Mary, because I read an article quite recently. It was in the book, a biodynamic book, where this author said that, I think it was around 1945, come 1950, the wheat in America was 17% protein, and now it is 9% protein.
Yeah.
So what's that saying?
Well, it's saying one, chemistry has destroyed the soil, and therefore the soil microbes can't provide nutrient for the plant. Possibly genetic manipulation has given them a product or a wheat or a corn or whatever, or a soybean, that may be so-called disease-resistant. It may be so-called a higher producer. But, hello, what's happened to the quality? And the cost has gone up because a lot of these genetically manipulated crops are hybrids, and therefore, whereas in the past the grower could say, "Wow, that was a great plant. I'm going to collect that seed, and that's going to be the basis of my next season," they can't do that and they can't do that because it's a hybrid that's owned by some other company. They also, when they start to use these particular crops, they have to use the pre-emergence herbicide, the post-emergent herbicide, the chemical, the fertilizer, to be able to grow this crop that will give volume maybe, but not quality. And so, yeah, I mean, this is happening everywhere, and it makes me very angry that this is what happens.
So with biological farming, that farmers can revert back to, or as you're sort of saying, hopefully get paid for quality produce.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, it's already been shown by some of the potato growers that they've got higher sugars, higher carbohydrates from their biological potatoes. There are around the world, there's lots and lots of evidence of protein levels going up. Just in pastures, somebody who's just running pastures, the Brix level, the sugar level of pastures goes up simply by putting compost and compost tea out. It doesn't cost anything apart from just to put it out. It doesn't have to be purchased in, because the evidence shows that you get the microflora of the soil doing what they were put here to do. Get them acting, then they will do the work. They will increase the quality. You don't have to. It doesn't have to be an outside input.
Well, I'm going to go to another subject, just a minor variation of this. That in your talk at Oxley, you did say from a healthy soil. No, please correct me if I'm wrong. From a healthy soil, you got the bacteria, the fungi, etc., that can drift upwards onto the leaf and, in effect, protect the leaf. Would that apply? Is what I just said true? And would that apply to protecting the leaf on a cereal crop against fungal rust and that sort of thing?
Yeah. The whole idea. Well, the way nature works is that it's a holistic situation. What happens in the soil when you've got a plant debris breaking down? Microorganisms are there releasing it. The so-called pathogens are not actually pathogens. They just happen to be an organism that is part of the environment that, because of our monoculture situation, is able to get out of hand if the crop is not as healthy as it could be. And so if you have a healthy soil, you have all of the beneficial fungi, which you can actually buy as well, but you don't have to if you've got a good soil. They're there, and yes, they drift up into the canopies, onto the grasses, or wheat is a grass anyway, but up into the plant environment above the ground. And they become then part of the population that is a protective, generally beneficial population that will protect against, in many cases, against an influx of a particular pathogenic spore if it happens to proliferate for some sort of climatic reason. And this is why you have much less disease, because as long as you've got a good, what has been found, as long as you've got a good coverage of at least 70% coverage of beneficial organisms on a leaf surface, then the impact of a potential pathogen is almost 100% negated. And so once you start to get a natural population going below 70%, then this is when the opportunity for pathogenic spores, for example, to be able to get into those vacant spaces that are usually vacant because there's been a chemical there, and then they can initiate disease under whatever the conditions are for that particular disease. So a good, healthy soil does two things. It provides a whole battery of microbes that are beneficials that will waft up into the canopy. It also means that the plant that's growing in that healthy soil has a natural ability. It's the cells are stronger, the plant itself is stronger, and therefore it has the ability to withstand influx of a pathogen, along with its good microflora population that's covering all its surfaces, then it's eminently more able to cope with a disease outbreak than a plant that, one, is in an unhealthy soil, therefore the plant itself isn't healthy, and two, because it has very little natural beneficials on the leaves, because there's been a chemical sprayed that has knocked out not only the pathogen that it was aimed at, targeted at, but all the beneficials as well. So again, healthy soil gives you a healthy plant, gives you access to, for free, no cost, access for free for all of these beneficials to come up out of the soil, waft up into the canopy and protect the plant.
Well, I think we can sum up here, and you can do the summing up, but there seems to have very, very, from what you just said, there seems to be a very, very good reason why a farmer would get his soil to be biologically active, call it healthy, have checked out with a microscope, worked in with you, because if they can do what you just said, have the soil basically protect the leaf.
Exactly.
So you might like to finish up on try to elaborate on what I just said, Mary.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. AgPath has the skills and works with other consultants who have the skills to be able to give the farmer or a backyard gardener or a broadacre farmer or a person who produces animals. We're able to give them the information by testing their soils, testing their plants, and then on the basis of that information to work with them to change the direction that they may have been going in, or to maybe just improve the direction that they're already going. And give them confidence that yes, a biological system does work. We have the skills to be able to do the testing. We have the skills to show them how to use a microscope, for example. We have the skills within our little group to be able to show them how to make compost tea, leachates, how to use them, and to understand if they are in a cropping system and they have a particular disease pathogen, to help them understand how the pathogen becomes a problem and how they can manipulate their soil and their cropping environment or their 12 month of their season to minimize the impact of any particular disease that is specific to their particular cropping system. So we have all of that in the lab. We're down here in Gippsland. We're in the middle of a farming area. I am a farmer, and so I have great sympathy for anybody on the land. And I would like to use my skills, my laboratory, to be able to make farmers more able to farm with minimized inputs but maximized outputs. I guess that sort of sums up what I want to do.
Fantastic. Now, Mary, I'm going to ask you one more question, and then we'll wind it up, unless someone else asks us a question. If a farmer is a newbie to a microscope and he feels a little threatened because he's not that technically minded, how would you work with a person like that who feels he's a novice, feels that it's not for him, he's not academic, etc.? How would a microscope course work for that person who's feeling a bit doubtful about himself?
Well, I think what we have to do is to show that person that he can or she can use a microscope, or she can or he can have confidence that we will show them how to do it. Or if they really feel that it's not for them, then they talk to me about how they can get soil or plant material to my lab as quickly as possible so that I can help them. But I would feel that unless somebody really doesn't want to use a microscope, I can show them how to use it in the most basic way. to be of benefit to themselves. Anyone can do it. It's not rocket science. It's just confidence. So I don't believe there is a person out there, unless they choose not to want to use a microscope, that I can't show how to use basic microscope to take a picture and email it to me.
Fantastic. So it puts the farm in control when they start looking at a microscope, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And that's what's important. That's what farmers have got to take back control. We've lost it. And we've got to take back control, and we can do it by biological farming and using a microscope and using a lab like mine, where we are totally committed to trying to get the farmer in control of his or her enterprise.
Mary, I'm going to sum up. I'll let you sum up. So I'd like to thank you very, very much for coming on the line. I'd like to thank the farmers who have been online, and also I'd like to thank the farmers who are going to be listening to this CD, this Talk the Walk, when it becomes published and available to them. So, Mary, what would you like to say on a departing note?
Well, I'd just like to say have a look at the AgPath website, which is www.agpath.com.au. And just have a look at the services that we can provide. And I have spent my career trying to help farmers to grow in confidence and to understand that there is a future in biological farming, and that I'm here at the end of an email, at the end of a telephone call, at the end of a website, for them to call me and talk about anything. And no question is a stupid question. Every question has an answer. And the only reason that people might feel it's a silly question is because they haven't got the answer at the moment. So no question is too small. I'm always here. And I try to answer an email within 48 hours and quicker if I can. And a telephone call, if the phone at the lab doesn't get answered, then my mobile is always available.
Well, on that note, thank you very, very much for coming online, Dr. Mary Cole. I just do trust that farmers will be in touch with you, and this CD will be of great value to farmers.
Thanks, Hugo.
Thank you very, very much.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.